This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Kara Miller. How many cups of coffee have you already had today? According to the National Coffee Association, 64% of adults in America drink coffee, and those coffee drinkers drink an average of 3.2 cups a day. Well, the world may not have ended last week when it was rumored to, but it could feel like the beginning of the end of the world for coffee lovers. A recent study from the Royal Botanic Gardens and the Environmental Coffee Forest Forum warns that up to 70% of the world's coffee supply could be gone by 2080 due to climate change. So joining us to talk about this, the supply, the demand for coffee, what it takes to brew a really great cup, and how much we will be willing to pay for a cup of Joe are George Howell and Carolyn Dimitri. George Howell is a pioneer in the specialty coffee movement, and Carolyn Dimitri is an associate professor of food studies at New York University. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Hi, thanks for having me as well.
And George Howell, let me start with you. You founded the Coffee Connection, which was acquired by Starbucks. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, when you are part of the coffee industry, is there a concern within the coffee industry that, you know, global warming is a serious problem when it comes to coffee crops?
Oh, there is now. Absolutely. It's not just among us roasters, but it's especially from the farmers. Having just been to Kenya and seen what's going on there and a drastic drought last year, which really changed and lowered the amount of coffee being produced. And the last 2 years in Central America, I think Guatemala, the landslides I've seen, El Salvador, Colombia, massive rains 2 years in a row. Things are changing. It's not necessarily – I haven't seen them say it's getting hotter, but the weather's getting topsy-turvy. It's unpredictable.
So does that mean that there's just fewer coffee beans being harvested? Does it mean that people are being driven out of the industry and saying, this is just not a good living, I'm going to find something else to do? What are you seeing?
Not yet, no.
Okay, not yet.
But we certainly have seen, like Brazil has actually produced quite a bit of coffee, and we see prices going down because of that right now. But again, in different countries around the world, we're seeing real troubles. And while I haven't seen a mass migration like the kind I saw around 2001, 2002, when the price of coffee went through the floor, that might start to happen if this continues.
Mm-hmm. Carolyn Dimitri from NYU, I'm wondering if you're, you know, Howard Schultz, the CEO of Starbucks, or if you run, you know, Pete's Coffee, if your business is coffee, should you be worried?
I don't think that I'd be worried if I were the head of Pete's or Starbucks. I think probably the people that will be most harmed by climate change would be the farmers of coffee. I mean, I think that still overall consumers are willing to pay a lot of money for coffee. And if you have a decrease in the supply, I think I would just expect to see prices go up. So the consumers, I think, and the big coffee roasters are probably in good shape. I think it's the smaller producers and maybe the smaller roasters that would experience more trouble.
Well, okay, let me ask you about that then, because, I mean, you've had for a long time more high-end coffee suppliers like Starbucks, but in recent years you've seen a massive movement by McDonald's. Dunkin' Donuts, of course, has been in coffee for a long time, but this effort to have lower-priced cups of coffee. So, I mean, do you think it's possible that McDonald's is going to end up doubling or tripling the price of coffee, Carolyn Dimitri?
No, I don't think. I mean, I think you will see, like, the market is still pretty segmented in high end and then lower end. And I think that there maybe all of the out migration of farmers. I guess I'd be very inarticulate, but I don't really see that as a realistic solution. I think farmers will still keep growing as much coffee as they can because farmers in those areas don't really have the option of producing other crops. And so I think they'll keep producing. Their yields will be more variable and there might be more variation in the prices. But I think the big companies can absorb, you know, a lot of price fluctuation. And I think there'll still be a lot of competition at the lower end. So I don't expect like a $3 cup of coffee at McDonald's ever.
Okay.
Yeah, I think another point is that new varieties and hybrids are being created precisely thinking about climate change as well.
I see. So you've got stronger plants that might be resistant to fluctuations in the weather.
Higher temperatures, okay. Especially that sort of thing. Drier conditions, all of this.
Now, does that drive down the quality of a cup of coffee?
Well, that's what we're afraid of, absolutely. Mm. You know, a lot of very high-quality coffee comes from small farmers, not all of it by any means. But, you know, you're situated in a particular spot of land that right now is perfect for creating great coffee. What happens in 10 years from now and beyond, and can they make the adjustments? Just like the birds and the animals, can they really make the change?
Now, tell me about prices, because, you know, as I mentioned, you founded the Coffee Connection. It was acquired by Starbucks. Now you're the founder of the George Howell Terroir Coffee Company. How much are people willing to pay for a good cup of coffee? I mean, could we get to the levels where people are willing to pay a lot for a good glass of wine, right?
It's definitely going up without a doubt. They're especially it's an interesting dichotomy we're seeing. People are very willing to pay high prices for convenience. Mm-hmm. If you look at the K-cup, these little capsules that you make, you're already paying $20 a pound and more, easily. If you're getting some of the fancier instant coffees, you're paying way over that. So now you have the specialty people, like myself, who are selling coffee somewhere between, say, $13 an ounce, 12 ounces, all the way up to $50 and more for some very special coffees.
Now, how does that translate into, like, dollars a cup?
It's not that much. A $10 pound of coffee is approximately about 50 cents.
Okay. Okay. So this is if you're brewing it yourself, of course, it's always cheaper.
Yeah, exactly right. If you're brewing it, yeah, you're going. And you already see cafes around the country that are brewing coffee to order or in smaller batches, and the price starts at $2.50 and higher, and goes up from there. And people are loving it.
Carolyn Dimitri, broaden this conversation out for us a little bit. Is it only coffee that we're talking about when we think of, okay, what kinds of crops are going to be affected by climate change? I mean, I wonder, as a chocolate lover, whether cocoa, which is often grown in the same kinds of areas as coffee, is going to be affected too.
I mean, I think that all agricultural products will be affected to some degree or another. I think we just might notice it. Well, we might notice it more for the higher priced luxury items like coffee and cocoa. But I expect that it will be fairly broad and there'll be a lot of adjustment in where crops are being grown, like around in the same area of countries or from one country to another. So, I mean, I think climate change is serious for all agricultural production, you know, not just our favorite products.
And are there steps that you're seeing that people are taking to try to head off the effect of climate change on a particular crop or on a particular country?
I guess I don't really pay attention to agriculture at that particular level. I think more of those activities we would probably see on an industry-wide level. But I kind of look at things from a broad perspective, so I can't really speak to any particular crop.
But your view about coffee is that people are, I don't know if we should use the word addicted, but like it enough that they're willing to probably track those prices somewhat higher as they go up.
You know, I think we love coffee. And, you know, some people love their inexpensive cup of coffee and other people love their expensive cup of coffee. And I don't think it takes up such a large part of our budget that it's actually going to shift our consumption habits all that much.
And George Howell, you wanted to get in here.
Another thing with the climate change that we see are pests coming up. In coffee, at least, they're coming up higher and higher in altitude to areas that have never been affected by these pests before. You see certain insects doing this and also fungi that are coming in. And they can really devastate crops. So there's a much greater care being taken now and more labor being put into preventative systems that were not required just a few years ago.
I mean, in some countries like South Sudan, they're saying that Arabica beans could be extinct by 2020, yeah. which is not far away.
Very scary. I was just in the wild parts of Ethiopia, which is really the cradle of quality coffee, Arabica. And there is real concern about that. The mountains don't go much higher than where they already are. So, it's a big concern.
And Carolyn, Dimitri, finally I want to ask you about the demand for coffee and the issue of the coffee culture, which seems to be growing, because as we've got these issues with climate change, we've got Starbucks moving into India and China and trying to create the kind of coffee culture there. In many places, they really have a tea culture that we have here. How do you see this playing out in terms of demand for this product around the world?
Well, I guess if I could answer a slightly different question and follow up on this notion of how coffee is being, the different types of pests are coming up and attacking coffee crops. I mean, this whole issue of climate change has a much broader implications for, you know, our world in terms of how it's going to affect the biodiversity. And coffee is just, you know, one of our varieties of biodiversity. So I think that, yes, it will be hard for our coffee, but it really could change the way things are grown around the world. And like what you mentioned, how tea is being replaced with coffee. I mean, what about that ecological system right around the tea plants, I mean, as it's being replaced? So, I mean, I think what we'll see is this huge shift in biodiversity around the world. And I see that as maybe a larger problem for our food system than maybe having a more expensive cup of coffee.
Right. Carolyn Dimitri, Associate Professor of Food Studies at NYU, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And George Howell, let me come back to you about that sort of question of increased coffee culture around the world and demand. Does that mean coffee is just going to be supplanting other crops? Are we seeing other countries jump on this coffee bandwagon?
Well, we are seeing it in China with Starbucks. And of course, well, it's very hard to know because the price of coffee goes way up. People start to want to plant it. Now we're watching the price of coffee going down again.
But is it still close to? I know recently it's been close to a 30-year high. Is it still close to that 30-year high?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is. There is some increase, but really the talk for the most part is more about increasing yields than it is growing it in more area.
Okay.
Right. That's really what we see. You go to Kenya. The small farmers there that are, we're talking, a farmer there has maybe 200 plants, which is producing maybe 1 pound of coffee a year. So this is nothing. And they're trying to increase yields 10 times over. And it is possible, but with much greater education and more inputs.
I want to bring into the conversation Boston Globe political reporter Matt Visor. He's part of the Washington Bureau, and he recently wrote a piece for the Globe about all the coffee that he's had on the campaign trail. Matt, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to switch gears just a little bit here, but stay with that idea of coffee culture that has certainly become powerful in America and now increasingly, as George Howell was saying, across the world. So talk a little bit about how important coffee was to you while you were covering politics this year.
It was sort of a vital part of my day, and not only in trying to get the necessary amount of caffeine into my body, but also, just it became a part of my ritual in traveling. I was covering mostly Mitt Romney and the Republicans during the primary and during the general election, and so I was traveling an awful lot and was always sort of seeking a unique place in each of the locations that I went, and sort of used coffee as my sort of way to get out of the campaign bubble a little bit and find some place that was unique to each place, as opposed to I mean, Starbucks was certainly reliable in a pinch, but, I was sort of trying to find independent coffee shops and sort of coffee shops as part of this third wave of coffee.
Now, you say that you're a self-professed coffee snob. I wonder, did you feel like most people were just pretty content with whatever the hotel was serving, or maybe McDonald's across the street, or that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, whatever the hotel had, Starbucks was certainly reliable for a lot of people. Some people like the Dunkin' Donuts, stops. I sort of would try and drag some of my fellow campaign reporters out with me to try and experience some of those other types of coffees. I was moderately successful, I think, in that.
George Howell, let me bring you in here. And I wonder, how common is it to be that in that coffee snob category, where the sort of general mass market coffees are, just as they are for Matt Visor, not really cutting it?
Yeah, well, it's a growing movement for sure. It's sort of like going from seeing the world in black and white, and suddenly you're going to Technicolor. And now you're really discovering colors you just never saw before. And that makes the difference. People who really taste it and go, oh, wow, really can't go back. And that movement's growing.
George, have you had Dunkin' Donuts, McDonald's, and Starbucks coffee?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You've sampled all the big ones.
Oh, sure. And I know. I remember Continental Airlines and having their coffee. That was really something else.
Okay, well, let me ask you, is there one of those that sticks out for you? And you might say, you know, it's better than you might expect.
Very hard to answer that one. I know when I drive to Maine 5 miles up on the interstate, there's the Starbucks, and I'll get a cappuccino.
Okay.
Right. But I got to add the milk and the sugar and that kind of thing.
And you also have to order a short cappuccino, I've found. I mean, they will make a smaller cappuccino for you at Starbucks, but it's sort of like a secret code that's not advertised, I don't think, on the menu. And at certain Starbucks, they sort of look at you funny when you ask for a short cappuccino.
Right. But if you see it, if you're really in a good place and the coffee's really good, then I'm going to drink it black. No sugar, no milk. And it's sweet, and it's a flavor that really is different, one coffee from another.
Matt Visor, one of the interesting things about your article is you talk about different cities in the country and sort of the places where you find real coffee hidden gems. What were some of those places?
I was really surprised. I was in Grand Rapids, Michigan, sort of a place that I don't think of as having good coffee. There was a place called Madcap Coffee it's really starting to expand a lot now. That was really surprisingly good, and in a location that I was not picturing. Another place was Salt Lake City. I guess I was out there working on a story about Mitt Romney and Mormonism, and was sort of just assuming that the sort of the capital of Mormonism, which discourages caffeine consumption, would not have a great coffee scene. But there were several good coffee shops there that I sort of discovered. Detroit had a pretty good coffee, and Ohio, where all of us political reporters were spending an awful lot of time in the final weeks. Columbus has a great coffee scene, that I sort of stumbled upon. So sort of unexpected places, not on these sort of the snobby coasts that have, long had good coffee scenes. It's the heartland that's now, starting to get some really good coffee shops.
Yeah, I was just in Kenya with Ryan, who is one of the owners of Madcap, and we were going, not in Kenya, in Ethiopia. And so we were traveling together there. And that's one of the big changes that's happened in the last 7 or 8 years, is that people in this third wave, they're traveling to these countries to actually see the farms and relate to how it's being grown and processed and all the rest, and learning like never before. No generation before this ever took an interest in coffee other than as something in a sack that you got, you roasted, and you sold. Complete change.
Matt Visor, you guys have both talked about the third wave. So for the people who are not the coffee connoisseurs, tell us, what is the first wave, the second wave, and the third wave of, coffee consumption?
So the first wave is sort of generally thought of as like sort of Folgers, sort of mass market in a can almost, a very watery sort of blend. It's sold far and wide. The second wave generally sort of thought of as more of Starbucks and Pete's Coffee, sort of more refined, but still sort of on a broader scale. And then this third wave is much more individualized, you know, single origin, like George was talking about, sort of people going to these actual countries and sort of you have more of a connection maybe with that place of where that particular bean is coming from. So it's a lot more sort of individualized and specialized kind of blend.
And you, I'm going to read a couple lines from your piece, which I thought were kind of funny. These are signs that you're in the right place for a really good cup of coffee. Here they are. Wooden floors, menu written with chalk, ceramic cups, baristas wearing hats, skinny ties, or tattoos, shop equipment that looks like it could be used for a grand science experiment. And then some signs are in the wrong place. Styrofoam cups, a bank of flavor shots ready to squirt into a cup that shouldn't need artificial additives, whipped cream, things for sale there that have nothing to do with coffee. George Howell, does that sound like a...
A lot of that's true. A lot of that's true. It's, you know, it's higher quality coffee has always been related to some degree with the artistic community. And it's all about expression, self-expression and so on. And so that's what you're seeing in these places. Happening in the coffee houses today.
Matt Visor from The Globe, you mention in your piece that New Hampshire, where of course you spend a lot of time if you're tracking politicians, not super great in the coffee scene. So tell me how you find D.C. and Boston stack up when you're looking for a really good cup of coffee.
D.C. is improving quite a bit. There's a place called Chinatown Coffee Company that's really good, and Filter is another one. And Madcap, the place that I stumbled across somewhat randomly in Grand Rapids, is actually expanding, opening up a place in D.C. hopefully soon. And Boston, I think, has gotten a lot better. I lived there for 9 years and moved to D.C. 3 years ago. And every time I go back to Boston now, it seems like there's another kind of great new place that's opened up. So I think Boston's improved quite a bit, in the coffee scene. So I think they're both becoming great coffee cities, and I always love heading back to Boston and sort of seeing what else is opening up.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a major change in Boston the next year and a half, with more cafes coming in, roaster cafes, including us. We're certainly looking in the Cambridge-Boston area.
What is spurring that? I mean, what is changing in Boston that it's becoming more of a market for people who are real connoisseurs of coffee?
Well, I think what really made a big change was when Stumptown from the West Coast came to New York City a few years ago. And suddenly the New York Times was all about that. Spotlight came down on these cafes, the roasters, and look at New York now. It's exploding, especially the Brooklyn area with all these different places. And Boston has received some of that interest as well that's happening. You have a lot of a huge student population here, a lot of people who are really want to know about the world and taste what is happening. So it's ripe for major change.
Are there other countries that have a much better developed coffee culture than we do in terms of like knowing what's really good and really seeking out the best stuff?
No, I don't really think so.
Okay.
You see spots, Norway, Oslo. You can see some great coffee houses there. Some spots in Japan, but then you get an awful lot of other stuff. I mean, there's all kinds of currents running through coffee right now. If you go to Asia, it's Kopi Luwak that's happening right now.
What is that?
That is a civet eats the fruit and passes the coffee out the other end. And this is collected, and this can be over $100 a pound.
Wow.
You have this kind of thing. You have movements towards the bigger the bean, the better. Almost like tomatoes back in the 50s in the States, where big, red meant a lot more than the flavor to it. So you've got a lot of currents. What's new and exciting is often what is running the show at any particular time.
Okay, and what are you trying to bring to the scene? I mean, I know way back when you owned the Coffee Connection, Starbucks approached you many times, and they said, yeah, we want to take over your company, and you rebuffed them,
right.
And then finally they did. So in a way, there's that part of you that got absorbed by the corporate world, but now you're trying to do something different.
Yes.
What is it?
That is the single farm. in the 80s and the 90s, the more I started learning about coffee itself, the more it became obvious that the farmers were not really benefiting from this great party that was being had in the States and elsewhere. While we were making money with good margins, they were not. And prices have remained extremely static up until recently. So it's really about changing the way coffee is perceived and getting people to understand that there can be great value in coffee just like there can in wine, and that it's not always related to goats and donkeys and so on, but that it too has amazing breadth to it and really great products that can be found.
And Matt Weiser, a final question for you. When you look around at your friends, your colleagues, do you see, can you track that kind of increasing interest in more specialized, higher quality coffee?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like George was saying earlier, you know, once you sort of taste it, you're oftentimes an immediate convert. I think there is something to be said, too, of the similarities with sort of farm-to-table dining and, you know, sort of more localized places that we seek out. And I think I see that as well. And I think the coffee consumption is related a little bit to that, where people are sort of seeking something different, something unique, something that's very refined and sort of a better product. I do see more people sort of going after that, you know, than they had before.
I have to ask you, how much are you willing to spend on a cup of coffee?
I'll go, you know, I mentioned, I think Gimme Coffee at one point was, or maybe it was, in New York was selling $12 cups. I mean, I don't know that I go quite that high, but I'd approach, the Starbucks has this new $7 cup. I haven't tried that yet, but I'm willing to pay that much, I think, for a really good cup, especially when I'm on an expense account traveling.
I have to say that we are on a new curve, a new development, and one is we're developing vocabulary for coffee that didn't exist 10 years ago, all positive, much like the wine industry did 100 years ago. And so we really see that taking place. It's also, we're learning again how to really taste coffee. I would recommend anybody who wants to get into that, when you taste coffee at first, it's too hot. Smell it. Get the aromas. Let it start to cool. And as the coffee cools, you're going to taste a lot more that's in the coffee. It's when the coffee's coming down near room temperature, 135 and down, that you really start to taste everything in it. Give yourself that moment and taste it then, and you're going to start discovering another world in coffee.
Well, there it is. Get out your thermometers. We've been talking about coffee and how climate change could have a huge impact on the supply and cost of coffee. And we've also been talking about how our coffee culture is growing and what we're willing to do and pay for that perfect cup. I've been speaking with George Howell, founder of George Howell Terroir Coffee Company, and Boston Globe political reporter Matt Weiser. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you.
For having me.
Well, the 47%, the 99%, Herman Cain's 999 plan, numbers made a big splash in this year's political scene. What have some of the other defining moments been in 2012, and what is ahead? I will be bringing you that conversation next on Boston Public Radio. I'm Kara Miller, and you're listening to 89.7 WGBH.